Thank you for joining me on the Boise Art Scene Podcast. I'm Morgan McCullum. I'm here with Blood Lemon, who will be performing at Tree Fort on Sunday. Thank you both, or all three, for joining. So can you tell me a little bit about the group, how you maybe got together a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, we are good friends that met in Boise.
Yeah.
And we played in different bands, and we loved our bands, and we wanted to play together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was just like having all played in other projects, just looking for the opportunity to play more with other women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, so we got connected, and yeah, I was like, let's try it out. Let's see how it works.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. And a little bit earlier, you told me that you kind of got together around the 2018 era. Is that right?
I think we started rehearsing in 2018, and we started playing. I think our first show was in October of 2018.
Yeah, that's
October or November.
Yeah, because it was like
just the end
late
of it.
Summer, maybe, that we started playing together.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Awesome. I saw that you have an older album from 2021, and that you've got a new album that has come out.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that you went out of the area to record it.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was quite a process.
It was. It was a lot of fun. We recorded at in Joshua Tree, and we recorded at a studio called Rancho de la Luna with Dave Ketching and John Russo. And we had a lot of fun working with them. I think we recorded the five songs in 4 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. About that.
Yeah. 4 days.
3 or 4 days, something like
three
that.
Or four.
Were they songs that you had well rehearsed then?
Most of them.
Most of them, except for the last song on the EP is Mudlark. That was the one that we didn't have finished yet. And so we finished it in the studio, which was really fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. So being here at Tree Fort, where are you performing? What's that going to look like for you?
Sure. We're playing at the Hideout stage, which is the second stage at Main Stage, inside the ticketed area.
Mm-hmm.
We've played that stage before in the past, I think 2 years ago.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cold. Didn't it start snowing?
I think it did.
Started snowing.
2 years ago it snowed a decent amount.
Yeah. In the middle of our set. Yeah. I remember I was like bundled up in my jacket.
That's right.
So who knows what we'll get tomorrow. But we're playing tomorrow, like late afternoon, just after 4. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Last night I was in the photo pit for before the Linda Lindas played.
Yeah.
And they were standing on the side stage getting ready to go on and like rubbing their hands.
Yeah.
And like one of them was like, it's so cold.
Yeah,
and it wasn't even that cold
in reality,
it's all relative, of course.
Yeah, and if you're from Los Angeles, it's a little bit cold.
I think we've had experience. It's not ideal, obviously, to play outside when it's cold out, but the crowd typically here every year shows up.
Oh yeah.
You know, whether
there were
it's
even
cold,
people here when it was raining and snowing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That was, I think, part of the, I believe it was that first year that the Tree Fort was in Julia Davis that it was particularly wet.
It was
and snowy
very
and
cold that year. That is very true. And we'd had two kind of warm Tree Forts back to back because we'd had the September one that had been a follow-up, you know, like our first back from COVID lockdown kind of stuff. And we played, that was the time, we played like a outdoor stage. We called it the rotisserie stage. It was like that 5 p.m. time frame again. And so the sun was just baking us.
It was right on us, too.
The whole time.
No shade.
The stage was
nowhere
like black. We're just like absorbing
dying
heat. And then that March we did a second Tree Fort right after, and it was relatively warm that year. I remember wearing my sandals and being like, this is great. And then we had the first Julia Davis one, and I was like, oh my god, I am freezing.
What the hell.
The The weather this year has been wonderful.
It really has.
Obviously today on Saturday, as we're recording this, it's a little drizzly outside,
yeah.
but it's not raining. It's just like a mist.
It
comes and goes. So
this is all typical Boise tree fort weather. You never know
welcome
what you're going
to
get. Yeah, welcome to spring.
When you're rolling the dice in late March.
Always. Yes, always.
But all in all, I'd say it's been great.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you've performed Tree Fort a few times before. Mm-hmm. What number of performances is this for you, do you think? Or at least years, maybe not numbers.
For Blood Lemon?
For Blood
time?
Lemon.
I think it might be our fifth.
The first time we played was at the Linen Building, and that was pre-COVID.
Gosh.
So I think this is our fifth time, approximately.
I think so.
Sure.
Wow.
Because that...
Well, it's so
September
hard because all of
March.
Us have been playing Tree Fort even not
longer.
In Blood Lemon.
Yeah,
sure.
That
right.
is true.
So it's so, like, I can't
I've
even
played,
how do you separate
I think there's
it.
Only been 1 year I haven't played in a band at Tree Fort.
Really?
Possibly.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure it's only 1 year.
What was the year?
I don't even remember.
Mm.
It was before Blood Lemon.
Okay.
After Finn Riggins.
Oh, just in that in between period.
There was an in between where I think 1 year. It was it like No Mostly Muff, No Finn Riggins,
wow.
Blood Lemon didn't exist yet that I didn't play.
That's hard to believe.
I know.
That
I
didn't play.
I know.
So you're all just chronic musicians, is that?
Chronic. I like that.
Chronic. I have been playing since I was like steadily since I was 16 as a like popular musician. I think even before that I started playing music like in band and singing choir. I've been singing since I could sing, so but like writing music for a long time.
Yeah,
I'm going on more than 30 years of
chronically
writing and performing and chronic.
Chronic.
Sorry, it's just
it's
a term
fine.
That I enjoy.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah,
it's an accurate term.
Mm-hmm. Who is the primary songwriter, or do you all share kind of responsibilities? How does that work?
We kind of all share. I think it usually starts with either me or Lisa bringing something to the table, mm-hmm. and then we all collectively add on top of it from there.
Excellent. And because it's a curiosity of mine, when you're working on your songs, are you starting with the melody or are you starting with the lyrics? How does your process work?
I think for myself, like, I thought more in those terms initially as a songwriter. Mm-hmm. Now I think more conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
I think I often come up with lyrics, like at least the idea of a lyric beforehand. Now, more often than not.
Yeah, that's true. When we started, I felt like you were kind of writing lyrics as we were going along.
Yeah.
And then now maybe
yeah,
not as
sometimes,
much.
Mostly I think for me, it's a concept or an idea
yeah.
of what I want to write about.
And then it kind of forms as we go.
Yeah, it forms as we go.
Yeah. For me, I either write like a riff on my bass, or I'll write a chord progression, and I usually have a melody in mind.
Okay.
And then I usually am like purposefully trying not to plan too much ahead of that, just to give room for Lisa and Lindsay to add whatever they want.
Mm. Sure. Well, and yeah, I mean, in a band, it's definitely got to be at least a quasi collaborative process.
Of course.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's been really nice about this project is that there's a lot of opportunity, but also like there's the freedom to try things and also the understanding that not everything's gonna work.
Totally.
And that willingness to take the chances and try things out.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Are there any other groups that any of you are performing with this year, or is Blood Lemon it?
For me, I play in Built to Spill as well. Mm. So I played with them yesterday. I was like, was it yesterday?
Yeah.
It was yesterday.
That's how it feels at Tree
Fort. I caught the last bit of that set yesterday.
Oh, cool. It was also really freaking cold. I was planning on not wearing my jacket, and I walked out on stage, and I was like, nope. I am not doing that.
Yeah.
It's a very physical activity to be on stage.
Totally.
And And like you've mentioned before, all sorts of weather conditions that you have to deal with. Have there, you mentioned some hot, has there ever been any play in a thunderstorm or anything like that?
Yes, totally.
Hail.
Hail was coming down, and then there was a thunderstorm behind us. And it was at Sawtooth Valley Gathering in Stanley, Idaho. We remember it because we just felt like witches.
With the lightning in the background.
We were playing our song Black Cap Cry, and it's like this really heavy kind of ethereal song. And it just felt so surreal to be performing it while this like crazy weather is around us.
It was cool. It was kind of magical.
And
the crowd was, they were such troopers too, because like, it was like hailing. And they'd like go hide, but they were all like on the periphery of this. And we were on a covered stage, fortunately. So it was like, we weren't worried about ourselves. But then it was like one of those things where it was just like kind of rolling around the mountains. So it would get sunny and people would come back out and be like hanging out and dancing and whatever. And then all of a sudden it would like start hailing again.
And then they would all run, but still listen and still enjoy the music. It was bizarre. We were all in it together.
I was at a concert over this summer at in Denver, and it was kind of a festival thing, 2-day thing. But as we were watching one band, the clouds started to come in, and then somebody came out, and they're like, "Hey, everybody needs to evacuate the venue. We are having a severe thunderstorm," and they get tornadoes and stuff in Denver.
You gotta take them seriously, right?
Yeah, and like we all had to evacuate, and the video after, like, there was like flash flooding through these like underpasses, and all the merch tents were just torn down.
What a nightmare.
It was wild. But to their credit, the next day, that was like the Saturday of the show, and then the next day it was all back together. Like, I mean, of course, they did have like some actual like original art booths and stuff like that, and there was merch that got ruined in that way. But yeah, it was incredible. And even some of the artists that, after it was canceled, some of the places where they had people like shelter that didn't have other places to go, like some of the artists were performing little like impromptu shows.
That's awesome.
I love that.
But music is just, I love it. You know, it's one of those things that's, it's universal, you know, whatever. But
and it's communal.
I one of the things that I love about Tree Fort, especially here, is that you can just wander around and you can hear all kinds of music. You know, I want to say it was Thursday night. I saw an indie group in the Olympic, and then a bluegrass group at Pengilly's. I saw a different night. I saw, you know, Red Light Challenge at Hump and Hannah's.
And then there's like hip hop at like the Reef or whatever.
Last year there was Space Banana was one of the venues. It was like an alley between two places. I think this is the second time I've brought this up in this podcast. And they had like club music playing in there. The Neurolux, I was out there for a show that was not house music, but like, I don't know, like dance music. But there was also, when I went to the Press and Pony for a cocktail to end the night, you know, there was a Hank Williams Jr. sounding guy upstairs.
So just all sorts of stuff.
And I love it. You know, the city really comes alive during this time.
All kinds of genres,
you can
everything.
Sample it all.
With your new album, is there are there any particular songs that hold special meaning? I mean, for the individual, I'm sure that they're all special, but is there any particular song that stands out as one that?
The one that I just usually think of in terms of like representing the album was like our first single, "Perfect 2". That one's a really popular song from that from this EP, and I think it still is like a favorite right now. Like when we play it live, people really enjoy it. And It's something that we're really relieved is that it's finally out too for people to listen to, because we've had a lot of people ask about it at shows and
Yeah, I agree. That's one of my favorites to play.
So fun to play.
I think the thing for me that's really interesting about this collection is it's a, you know, it's a shorter EP, but each of the songs is kind of its own character.
And
So they individually hold different meaning for sure.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. While you're here, is there going to be physical copies of the album that people can pick up?
Yeah. Are we going to sell them?
Do you want to?
Yes.
I was planning on it. I was going to bring some merch tomorrow.
It's funny with festivals. I'm like, I never
we sell a few things every time we play.
Well, that's true.
I think it's, you know, we'll have a few things.
We usually have a limited amount at festivals, just because we don't
like
have enough room.
Yeah, just like a couple of our designs.
Well, you never know if people are going to actually pick up stuff.
I mean, it's hard. People do, though.
No,
for sure, and it is hard to know. And with when you're at a festival with this many bands, it's like, obviously, if you're a fan, like, you'd be saving up all year to buy the merch.
Fair.
I've gone by the band merch area at the main stage several times already and gone, ooh, like, that's so good. But yeah, we'll have a little bit of merch with us tomorrow. Definitely have
We'll have vinyl.
Copies of the vinyl.
That's fantastic. I when I interviewed Jesse Blake Rundle earlier, he said that he was going to be pressing a vinyl for his upcoming album.
And
I love collecting music on vinyl.
I think you know, a lot of people do, and it's becoming a thing that's kind of a must for bands when they release new music. It's a great way. I don't know, you make decent money from it. It's a great format for listening.
I think the format is pretty, for me,
it's the best.
It's superior for listening.
Special.
And obviously, like, we all have, most of us have access to digital listening in some format, right? But I think, like, there's something special about having physical copies. And I think that, you know, as somebody who makes music, listens to music, but also like as a reader and as somebody who consumes things, like there's something about art that without the physical, it's an intangible thing in some ways because it exists, but how do you own it, right?
Certainly,
like, quote unquote. And having those physical copies sometimes is like, you know, you're always going to have access to it, right?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer
in
that.
Like, I do a lot of, like, reading through digital means, let's say. And like, when you think about the ability that there is out there for people to ban things and, like, take things away, it's like, if I don't actually own a copy of that book, then do I lose access to it? Which could happen for music, too, you know.
100%.
If things became more... Anyway, you get what I'm saying, but I think, you know, there is value and I think that fans, my experience being at the merch table is like, they want to support artists that they appreciate, that they enjoy. They want to have copies of albums and as a format. We know that it lasts better than some of the other formats that we've seen.
That's true.
Come out over the years.
I recently was able to acquire, back in the 60s, my dad was in a band, and they were in an area that had a bunch of garage bands and a recording studio.
Nice.
And this recording studio, like, just put out a whole bunch of these little bands. And so they have an EP, but there's actually like a collector's market for these old, like, especially this particular record label is Varden Records, or something like that, out of like Chico, California.
Nice.
Or something.
Yeah.
One of the band members that was almost like an uncle to me growing up, you know, had a broken copy of it in a frame on his wall that had snapped, and somebody gave it to him, like, here you go. But, you know, so I grew up seeing that, but I had never actually, like, heard their song because I mean, it was recorded on a record that nobody owned. But, you know, through the internet, I've been able to hear it since, but I recently acquired it, and it was just, it's a special little piece for me, you know, as a
music fan.
Yeah. And it's a, existing piece. It's a piece of music that, you know, it's not widely available on streaming platforms or anything like that. It's there. And you know, the physicality of media, I really appreciate being able to know that there's not going to be a contract dispute and somebody's going to remove it from, know, or
whatever. Yeah. And I think, like, sometimes too, the visual aspect of that is part of the experience as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
I love Apple Mart.
Yeah. You have to consider, like, the iconography that we associate with different artists. You know, it's just part of the story, part of the mythos. So
yeah.
I mean, full disclosure, in my bedroom, I've got the band Rancid. I'm always a big fan of them. Nice. And I've got, at one of their concerts, they had picture discs of, at the time, they had like 5 albums. And so I got the set of that.
Cool.
And they, too much info dumping here, but they, back in the 80s, they were in a couple of the members were in an influential group called Operation Ivy.
Yep.
And I've got the picture disc of that band on there. And
yeah.
So yeah, I've got those hanging up and some other albums hanging up, and that artwork, that it's just, you get that appreciation. And it's a way to really engage with the music. It feels like,
and
you
it's
know.
A tangible thing. And then you also know that the musician is getting fairly compensated for it too.
You're not worried about them getting fractions of a penny from the stream.
And when you're going to a live show and you're buying the band shirt, it doesn't just represent like your support of that band or what have you. I think it helps make more concrete the memory of that experience.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like every time you wear that shirt, you're going to think about it.
My closet is full of band shirts. And,
know, like, absolutely. Well, like, I get it, you know, and I mean, wearing a band shirt, it's another way of not just showing that support, but also like of making that connection with something that you did love, enjoy, whatever it is. Yeah.
Well, for me, I'm so ADHD. I tend to forget who I saw, you know, I'm like, especially if it's not somebody that I know already, you know, I'm like, oh, who was that we saw? And then I'm looking back through the schedule or something. But when I hear them and I know that I like them and I can walk over and buy a record, I mean, I do again prefer to buy the records, but you know, if there's a CD or something there, if I can pick it up and, you know, do a little support for them, but also have access to that music, that's, I love it when I'm able to do that for sure. And more directly supporting the artists and not going through the filter of a label or something like that. But yeah, I do see some bands around that have merch, some that don't, some that have attended merch booths. When I saw Red Light Challenge, they had like, they obviously travel around with like a box that they have like open up, and it's got like a Venmo sticker.
We all have like our own little displays and everything. You just kind of have to. It's a little odd because that's like a thing that's expected now of bands, is you have your music, you have to play it well, and then you have to have your own little boutique in the corner.
Right.
With your merch. And it has to look good, and you have to have your apparel that looks good.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it's kind of wild.
I mean, I think when it comes down to it too, it's like, there's that conversation about like, people want to support you, and you want them to have something that they're going to enjoy too.
Totally,
I think the saddest thing that I've ever, that I've seen when I've been touring and things like that, is like, when bands have terrible t-shirts, and then people buy them, but then they never wear them.
But then they never wear them.
You know, and it just feels so wasteful. It's like, people could have just given you tips, right? Or something. But also, like, that's like advertising for you. You know, it's like free advertising. So, in a way, like, so that if somebody know you, you're friends with that person, you'd be like, oh, you saw this band, who are they? Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, it helps. Anyway.
Well, there was a band that was here last year, and they were here this year again, called Social Cinema. And I was just walking through the Grove last year, and they were playing, and I was like, oh, I like the sound of this, you know? And so I stopped and listened to them, and I bought their record after, and, you know, I went and saw them again this go around. And I mean, they had a merch booth, but it was, they had the same album that I already owned, so I chose not to buy it again, but you know, I appreciate that, you know, that they stuck with me, because I was able to have that memento from the
totally.
Show.
And, yeah.
But I also do understand that it could be a big burden. It's another thing to think about. If you've got a manager and a crew or something like that.
You know, one of the things that, and you were talking about like creative economy, mm-hmm. I think that people from the outside think that it's just like money comes easy to that. It's like, there's so much work to it. And I think most artists are not business people in my experience.
Exactly.
And so we're not necessarily savvy about how to make it work and getting paid fair wages as a musician is
already hard
so
as it is.
So challenging. I mean, there's nothing that says, there's no set standard that like, you know, you're gonna get anything, you know, right. for an artist like Chapel Rowan to talk about the fact that artists need healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like is huge, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, you're all independent contractors.
We're independent contractors, yeah. Absolutely. And even when you're making millions of dollars for a record label, like yeah, if that's the case, like maybe you can afford to pay out of pocket to go to the doctors, but mm-hmm. that's not sustainable if you have a long-term health condition
or
something,
you
know?
Or
yeah,
something.
And especially on like her level where she is essentially like an athlete and working for a record label.
Totally.
And she can totally hurt herself.
Yeah.
On stage.
And anything can happen to anybody. You know what I mean? It's like.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think like people like take for granted that musicians don't become famous overnight.
Oh, no.
That is such a myth. And it's
famous bands were local bands first.
Always. And it just is so much work to not only make the money, but to maintain it and
maintain it. That's a really good.
Yeah,
because underlying.
Even you know, like when you think about like a band like Youth Lagoon from here, mm-hmm. you know, it's like he and his in that group like kind of felt like an overnight success, right? But then there's pressure on artists to follow that up, mm-hmm. you know, like make an even better album whatever. Like there's this level of expectation that comes at a certain point where you become a commodity too, right? And then there's like, it's a hard balancing act, I think, when it just comes down to it. And I think it's fine for people to expect things, but it's also like, if you set yourself up for an expectation, you can also set yourself up for disappointment, right?
Yeah.
And art is fickle.
Oh yeah, well.
Yeah. Bands are fickle, musicians are fickle. It's a challenging thing.
Yeah. I'm working on a documentary about, you know, how artists can live in Boise, basically.
Yeah,
really?
And part of that is, so I'm doing an artist residency at the Commonwealth right now, and my project for that, and that's in Garden City. My project for that is gonna be a documentary about 20-30 minutes long about, again, the quote-unquote creative economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, in that I interviewed several other people, and I mean, over the course of doing Boise Art Scene, I've done more than 60-something interviews, and very consistently, you know, people, artists especially, aren't able to accomplish the marketing side of it or the monetization side of it. And I included it in the documentary because I really loved the way that she said it. But one of the artists said, you can't expect an artist to be a business person. You know, we're so busy creating that you can't, you know. And I was thinking about that last night when I was running around on my phone, recording on a real camera and then pulling that to the side so that I can shoot some video with my phone for social media and then making sure that I make a post.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's
a lot. It's so much.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I'm forgetting to say, hey, look at me. You know, I'm like, look at all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And it's unrealistic in some way to think that, because people are exposed to so much and have access to so much that, you know, how do you cut through that?
Can you cut through it?
There's a lot of noise.
There's so much noise. And so it's challenging on both ends.
I think it was really challenging for me personally, like when we were coming out with our EP and like putting effort at the time, like at the beginning of this year, putting effort into finding ways to have us like stick out in our content, our social media content. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a lot. It's overwhelming. And
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud of like what we, you know, came out with and what we did. And, but it's just like, it's a whole other ball game that you have to worry about.
Yeah.
For promoting
yourself.
Well,
and it's ever-changing.
And it's changing all the time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you have to compete with the noise. And that's the part. Like sometimes I have, I don't know, I want to say like I feel guilty sometimes because I'm like, am I contributing to the noise? You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right? Mm-hmm.
Sure.
But it's like you want, you still want to get your art out there. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like bottom line is people do need art and they need music.
People do.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to advertise anything, I feel like that's a good thing, right?
One of the things that we've been talking about as a festival, you know, speaking mm-hmm. on from that side of things is for Treefort is like the quote that's running through my mind over and over again that we kind of were talking about at the beginning of the week when we all met as like a crew of people who work for the festival was just because it's fun doesn't mean it isn't important.
Yeah. Mm.
And
whoa.
Right?
Whoa.
Yeah. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. Like it's so much hard work to put on a festival. It's so much hard work to make music. It's so much hard work to do these things. And just because they're fun doesn't mean it's not important. Yeah.
It's a huge
aspect of culture.
I can tell you for sure from the interviews I've done on this documentary that it is noticed by the people who pay attention to those things.
Yeah.
The impact that having a festival like Treefort here has on the hotels and the bars and
the
restaurants,
businesses.
Everything. Mm-hmm. It's not just Treefort benefiting from it. It's the entire city.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely agree. It sometimes feels icky to market anything, you know, even that term marketing is kind of an icky thing, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and I think part of that too is finding the right fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to work with somebody who gets you and that you feel good about and that you feel like represents you well if you're not able to do it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And try to have fun with it and try to be genuine about
it. Yeah, genuine. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I kind of created this as a form of marketing, you know.
Absolutely.
I saw artists as somebody who needed to be more visible and more forward, and it also helped me by, oh, hey, these are the videos that I make, you know,
right.
And so it's a form of marketing for all.
I think like the podcast format is really nice too, mm-hmm. because the long form kind of articles that you might have seen in the past are rarer for bands like us that aren't, you know, selling out stadiums. So it's like, it is a really great format for, you know, a band or, you know, individual artists at any level to be able to have those deeper conversations beyond just basics about who they are and what they do.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I switched over to this podcast format for the sake of trying to make it more accessible and also to mm-hmm. let people say more about what they want to say.
Yeah, you know, I think it's smart.
Give you the audience a peek behind the curtain.
So. Yeah. So.
excellent. Well, is there anything else about this festival or your show coming up or upcoming events that you'd like to talk about?
I mean, part of me wants to say, like, I feel like even though our music hasn't been as political, I do feel like this set that we are about to play feels really important politically for me and us mm-hmm. as women from Idaho.
I think I totally agree. I think representation matters. I think playing a festival like Treefort is great because I think that they naturally book a variety of artists and showcase, like we were talking about earlier, like all kinds of different genres, but also all kinds of different people.
Yeah.
You know, we have bands from different countries. Throughout the years, we've had bands from places like, wasn't there like the punk band, where were they from? Were they from Iran or Iraq? like that. You know, just like getting artists from all over the place. And I think still as women musicians, because that comes up still a lot, and how important it is to see people doing the things that they do. Yeah. As the mother of a daughter, showing her that who I am and what I do is important, and things like that, that women can play music.
Yeah. And have a lot to say.
Have a lot to say.
Yeah. The most exciting band for me was at Treefort, and not to downplay Blood Lemon.
we don't have to be here. It's fine.
But when I saw them pop up on the schedule, I was like, oh my God, it was the Linda Lindas.
Totally. You know? Yeah.
And they're just like teenage girls.
Totally.
Like,
yeah.
And one of them barely a teenage girl.
Yeah, isn't the drummer like 14 or something?
Yeah, I want to say she was something like 10 or 11 when they went.
Even younger? Well,
when they first went.
Homework.
They performed at the Los Angeles library and
that was when I first, viral. Yeah, that's when I first saw them.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think that, you know, we continue. I mean, the story is one thing, right, that like, about rock and roll, and when we talk about the origins of rock and roll and things like that, but like women have always been playing rock and roll.
Oh yeah.
And I think it's more important than ever to see groups like the Linda Lindas, you know, like that anyone can go and pick up the drums or a guitar or a bass and figure it out.
Yeah.
And have fun.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, you get to see, and that's what I'm a big punk rock fan. And that's what I really love about punk rock is that it, you know, of course the best stuff is good, but also it's just kind of like, get there and do it, you know?
Punk rock is an incredibly inclusive genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it hasn't always been, but it is.
True,
yeah.
true.
It was a very violent genre.
There's been a lot of, there's been so much work to make it more and more inclusive. And
I feel like now, definitely.
Yeah, and I think like skill level, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like it's like, just go for it.
But yeah, I love seeing that variety. I love seeing all groups represented, you know, around here.
As much as possible. Yeah, totally.
Diversity matters.
I think it's really easy in a place like Boise to, I mean, it becomes kind of a bubble. And you know, there's getting those outside perspectives is great.
Important. Very important.
I read a quote once, and I'm not even going to remember who it's from, but it was in like a collection of book that I have about different women musicians, and it was like mostly from the 90s or something. But somebody was saying, why should we assume that one woman's experience is the same as another? You know, if you grow up in Brooklyn and you're a person of color and you play this kind of music and you're a solo female artist, your experience is completely different than mine growing up as like a white lower middle class in New Hampshire, you know what I mean? Like, we are not gonna say the same thing, nor should we have to, right? And that both experiences are valid, and that's super important. You know,
need to be brought up.
Yeah, hearing the band, like last year we had a band from the Ukraine.
Yeah, I remember
that. You know,
that.
It's like hearing a band from the Ukraine, their perspective is what it is, you know? Like, but it's gonna be so completely important. Different from, like, we had like a band from Mexico City that was like,
oh my gosh, there was a couple.
Yeah, so
a couple
good
of Mexico City bands, especially like, last year.
So different, and it's like just as important voices.
So rad, yeah.
But completely different perspectives, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, and yeah, I think as somebody who likes to, I like to research all sides of arguments when I can, you know.
Right.
I,
sure.
I think it's important to recognize that you can get those blinders on from your own experience and to try and experience what other people are experiencing. It's a nice way to get that for sure.
Totally.
Well, Blood Lemon, thank you so much for coming. You're playing at the Hideout at 4 p.m. on Sunday?
Yeah, just after 4, like 4:10, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. And that is in the main area. And people can come and see you, and that would be fantastic.
And also, I'm doing a solo set. Actually, right afterwards.
Okay.
I'm playing it at 6 at the Modern Hotel. It's like an unofficial showcase with Sawtooth Valley Gathering.
Yes.
Previously talked about. I'm going to be running from that stage over to to the Modern. Should be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds really cool.
Back to back.
Back to back.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you for joining me on the Boise Art Scene Podcast. I'm Morgan McCullum, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.